Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. Now, today's episode is geared toward married listeners, but I trust that anyone interested in the topic of neurodiversity and relationship restoration will benefit. Shauna Meek is the founder of Living Stones Coaching, and she joins us to share her incredible story through marriage, divorce, and unexpected reconciliation. Shauna opens up about the challenges she faced in her relationship, from communication breakdowns to confronting her husband's infidelity, and learning how his neurodiversity impacted his sexual brokenness and their marriage. Shauna then shares about setting boundaries, the importance of individual growth, and how she and her husband both worked on themselves to rebuild trust. Her story is such a testament to the complexities of love and the resilience and faith needed to navigate them. As a result of this journey, Shauna turned her personal trials into a passion for coaching and helping others through their own relationship struggles. To learn more about Shauna and her resources, visit livingstonescoaching.com. For even more resources, visit BeBroken.org or check out links in today's show notes. And of course, friends, we'd love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's dig into today's conversation with Shauna. Well, all right, Shauna Meek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to be able to have you on here because I think you have a very amazing story that I was about to say is really unique, but I actually think there's more stories like yours than maybe we even realize. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here, because I think there's aspects to your story that other people are experiencing, but they just have no reference point for knowing how to navigate it. So before we get into some very, very specific questions around, you know, the challenges maybe in recovery with a neurodiverse relationship, can you just kind of unpack your own story and maybe tell us how you got into some of the coaching and consulting work that you're doing now?
Absolutely. I love that you said that, because I do think it's maybe not the fringe that I originally thought, even when I was writing. So, and just, you know, navigating my own story, which I'll share about a little bit more. But I'll just kind of go back from the beginning of when I first met my husband and kind of walk us through that, if that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Good. All right. So we met back in 1995, so over 25 years ago. When we met, I didn't have a lot of reference points for what a healthy, good relationship was in a lot of realms. There were some things I could look at in other relationships that I had seen, but it was something I kind of fumbled with, and I would say my husband did as well. And but we met and we dated pretty quickly. At the time, we knew of God, but we didn't have a faith in Jesus that was, you know, really formed yet, and, you know, didn't have our salvation until later in our journey. So I'll share about that. But we met, we kind of had a quick courtship, if you will. I don't know if we would have called it a courtship then. Now I look back and think, okay, kind of, sort of. And we were married a couple years after we met, and we had our first son. We raised a guide dog. We got a new house. We did all the things we thought we were supposed to do. And a few years into marriage, after we had our first son, we recognized that there was some communication differences, and we always knew there was fumbling. So we didn't have the blissful, oh my gosh, you know, everything was great from the beginning. It was good. And then there was really hard, even in our early dating before we were engaged. And so when we got into marriage, then now we're living in the same home, we have a son, we have other stressors in life, and we started counseling pretty quickly, about 2.5 years into our marriage. And I thought that was good. I think we both thought that was good. Yeah. Until one day, my husband came home. He went for work that morning, came home and said, I want a divorce. I can't be a husband. And it was a complete, it was the first complete shock for me. I had never seen him that distressed and upset and done. I mean, it was a very surreal experience, very incongruent with the things that he had been saying he wanted in relationship. And here I'm thinking we're moving ahead together and he wants a divorce. I can't convince him otherwise. I pleaded, I begged, I did everything that I thought possible with our son who was only 8 months old at the time and thought, this is not the life I dreamed. So that was my first like official, you know, crisis and abandonment really. And with that, I'm kind of, you know, moving through the journey, but I couldn't convince him otherwise. And we divorced a year later in the state of California at the time. It took a full year. And I moved out that day because it was, he was serious and it wasn't, there wasn't any turning back. And I didn't understand why, but he didn't fully blame me either. He said it was himself. He had a hole in himself and just, you know, just this emptiness that he couldn't fill. And so he needed to go. So looking, you know, looking back on that, we now have a lot more information than we did then. But we divorced and I set pretty strong boundaries from the beginning. If this is what we're going to have, then we will co-parent. And we kind of, you know, we did that as best as we could. There were a lot of things I think we did well there, but devastation. I mean, absolute crushing of my heart. And there was remorse from him, but no change, like no fight for what we had. It was like, wait, what do you mean? So that was then in 2000 that we divorced and I went to counseling. There was no betrayal beyond betrayal of abandonment. I'm not going to say, but no sexual betrayal or anything at the time that had happened. And you know, we kind of went our separate ways and co-parented. And about 2.5 years later, after the divorce, I started dating again, felt, you know, well enough, I will say, to start dating, even though I wrestled with it a lot. But I chose to do that. And right about that time when I started dating again, he wrote me a letter and asked if I would reconsider, you know, being together, being married again. Another huge shock came out of the blue. Here we're not talking emotional things. We hadn't been physical at all from the day he walked out, like nothing. And I'm thinking, oh no, God, oh no. And let me pause and say, in this window of time, though I started dating, I most importantly started dating Jesus and knowing who my Savior was and knowing who Jesus was personally and accepting him into my life and really being led by him, not just knowing of him. Yeah. And so I thought, oh no, 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 this is not happening the way I thought. Like part of me is, you know, tugged to, wow, like this is actually happening, right? A shock. With a simple letter as he's dropping off our son one random weeknight. And the other part of me saying, oh, no, 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 I'm not going to be hurt like that again.
What was the, and I don't, maybe you're going to share this, but what was the impetus from his side to have that want, that desire to reconnect?
Yeah, it, I mean, it's a great question because it took him a long time to figure out, but his was, I did this work. I've made a grave mistake. Like I made a drastic choice to leave that he never was fully, it was, I don't want to say impulsive, but it was very quick. I mean, so I guess we could debate that impulsiveness. But he really recognized he wanted to be with me. Like it was, you know, he wanted a family with me. He wanted to be married to me. He He wanted to be the husband that he felt he couldn't be before and felt he could be now. And he had done a lot of work as well. And he came to know the Lord personally as well in that time. So that was a huge factor in it as well. So, you know, looking back, it's like, gosh, I wonder, I think that letter's around here somewhere. I still haven't stumbled on it. I want to read those words again from 2003 or late 2002. But yeah, that was really the main reason of I've made a mistake and I gave up something that I love and desire and want.
So how did you process that and like what happened next?
Yeah. I got to go on a retreat. I had been, you know, I said brave to go on a single parents retreat through my new church at the time for the second year in a row. And I tucked that letter in my bag and said, I'll meet you on the mountain, God. Like, we'll meet later because I want to throw this letter away. Part of me wants to read it again. And so I just knew that I needed to really wrestle this out with God. And that was a big wrestle. It was like a lot of discussion and debate and what would you want of this, God, but a lot of surrender. Because there was a part of me that knew he was a good man and what he desired and that something gravely went wrong. Like, why would we leave something like that? So there were so many parts of me wrestling and confused. And I took time. I took time to make that decision of what I wanted. And I remember God saying, I just want you to consider dating. Like, that's all I'm asking. And I felt like, okay, I can do what you're asking me, not what he's asking me. I can do what you're asking me. And so from that point forward, I felt like I leaned so much into the Lord, even through the wrestle. But that's really why I said my first yes after a few weeks of pondering the question. So that happened. We did start dating shortly after that. And I saw a different man. I really did. I saw a lot of difference in him. There were some red flags that I look back on, honesty and things like that, but I saw someone that was different in a lot of ways. And so I said yes. Fast forward, we remarried in later 2003 and had a very small ceremony and a lot of commitment to what this was going to be and his commitment to us, and really looked at, you know, what I needed in the relationship and shared that with him. So again, many years go by. We had, I would say, a better courtship, a better proposal. There were other things that I look back at and we kind of giggle about it now, but look back and think, okay, this is good. Like, this feels like the goodness of God. And it was in a lot of ways. And that was about, so that was 2003. And then 2008, so about 4 or 5 years, we had two more kiddos. So we had three kids at this time, and things started getting rocky again. And I thought, this, is he leaving again? You know, I had lots of fears, lots of triggers that came up through the year.
Was it similar kinds of things from the first time that the separation happened? Okay.
Yep, exactly. First, like, just communication was off again. These kind of abrupt, like, you know, episodic kind of, what would I say? Things that would remind me of kind of a combination of he would move towards me and connect with me, and then he'd pull away, or he'd get snappy about things, or our communication would miss. And I'd be like, what is going on? What's going on? Why is this so hard? And so I know marriage can be hard, but something was really, it was missing again. Like, it was like coming off the tracks again. What's going on? So, basically at that point, things got hard pretty quickly. Like, we were fighting a lot. There was a lot of distress. We were trying to not do it in front of the kids, but it was like, we need help again. And then I found a text that was absolutely devastating. I knew from the Holy Spirit at that point, I had grown in my walk with God, and I knew something was off in this particular text from another woman. And I knew that I needed to wake him. It was so Holy Spirit driven and led when I got it. And that was in 2009. And so 6 years in, two more kids, and here I find this. Just, you know, receiving something that I knew was off, but I didn't know what. And so I woke him, and he pretty quickly, well, through the night, confessed a lot of things that he had done that were true sexual betrayals, integrity breaches of our commitment. So he didn't leave the marriage in essence the way he had the first time, but he had been leaving the marriage. So by the time I caught this or got this information and discovered this devastating news, and he confessed it and shared over a period of 24, 48 hours. And I did my own do-it-yourself disclosure back then. All I knew how to do was gather as much information as I could, and absolutely flattened me. I mean, absolutely crushed. Mm-hmm. Three kids now. And how could this have happened? Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you've been on this merry-go-round before, mm-hmm. and yet it's a little bit different.
Yes.
And yet both of them were, you know, you mentioned the first time there's a little bit of this idea of the betrayal of abandonment. Now you've got betrayal of the sexual intimacy in your relationship. So walk us through how you were navigating kind of the healing and recovery from that. And then what happened to your relationship?
I knew that I needed help. I knew that he needed help pretty quickly. It was a pretty quick boundary request that I set for him to go get help. Thankfully, he went to our church. There was not harm in that, which we're so grateful for. going to our pastor and some, you know, our biblical counselor at the time, who had enough wherewithal. Now, there was a pretty clear line when he was acting out with other women versus other sexual breaches of integrity and intimacy that can sometimes be a little bit more gray still in the church. That's hard, but ours was a pretty clear line. So we didn't get harm in that, which I'm grateful for. And he went directly to 12-step recovery that week. He knew he needed help. He knew his running needed to stop in this realm of, you know, addictive behavior. And pretty quickly he was ready to face that. Now, he had been hiding that for off and on for 3 years before that. And so by the time it was like found out, he was ready for that recovery. And, you know, I look back and think it could have gone many ways. When I found out, I knew I needed help, but I also at the time was like, I have three kids and I need to survive. I need to breathe. I need to eat. They're 2, 4, and 9 at the time. And I need to really take care of myself. So, you know, where would I go to weep? Who would I call? I kept my circle really tight at the time, which looking back, I'm really grateful for. But I knew a few people that I could go to. And so I kind of at the time was like, you go figure this out, sir. You know, you go. I was not happy. There was devastation, but a lot of anger with that too, understandably. And so those were some of my first steps.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you, so obviously we're sitting here today and you are still married to this man. You are even doing like ministry type work together.
Yes.
So clearly you guys moved through this healing and recovery stage, but what are some of the biggest discoveries that you learned through that about yourself, maybe about each other, mm-hmm. that you maybe didn't know before and have become really, really part of a healthier relationship?
Some of the biggest ones I would say is I love thinking about the transformation that you talk a lot about. And so that we knew that we both needed more transformation, more growth in our own individual coping strategies. Now, mine weren't, you know, outside of the marriage, but I knew for me, some of the things, first and foremost, was we needed to stop the bleeding. So could he have sobriety? Could I set those boundaries? I was fumbling my way through. I didn't have professional help. I know now, this was almost 15 years ago. By the time this airs, it'll have been 15 years ago. And but I knew I needed to hold some boundaries on what I expected of full truth from him and, you know, safety for myself in order to build a level of trust that would even allow us the possibility. I did not commit to staying in the marriage for a whole year. I said I needed to work on my healing. So some of those things really helped us a lot to, you know, he knew I was serious. I had some bottom lines. I knew, now I fumbled through a lot of them in working through my emotions. But one of the things that I think he did well was he held the emotions with me. He, you know, he was able to come and show remorse to me for what he had done and sit with me in it. That is huge as I look back and didn't realize what I had then. But if he wasn't able to do that, that would have been really hard. So I knew that he could provide some level of empathy. Yeah. It wasn't always, hey, I know that you're sad, but he could sit with me in the pain. And that was something that I needed, we needed desperately.
Now, one of the things that you talk about and you know, is the aspect of neurodiversity. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that and how that was an effect in your relationship and in your journey?
Absolutely. And this was way later that this term even came to be. But what something, as we look back at how everything kind of played out, we see it all along. So 15 years ago is when the discovery and the do-it-yourself disclosure happened. And only a year and a half ago was when we figured out. So 13 and a half years sober, 13 and a half years doing recovery together, fumbling a lot through the years. And I will say a lot in the realm of emotional deprivation. So this kind of come in, he shows me who he is, he shares his heart, and then he's gone. And then it's like very inconsistent.
Kind of like a turtle, sticks his head out and then goes back into the shell, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Great example. And so I'd go, he has it. He knows how to do something here. So a year and a half ago, we had our third in-house separation and he had kind of an abandonment moment again. And it wasn't as drastic as the others, but there was an argument we had had and it was like he rented an Airbnb for 30 days like that. And I thought, whoa. What is, I mean, talk about taking me back to that, those initial trauma, like that complex trauma kicked in real fast. And I thought either he's acting out again or something is gravely wrong. Like, I mean, there were things that we were trying, like, why this erratic behavior? That is when we discovered that my husband was diagnosed with what was formerly Asperger's and he was diagnosed with autism level 1. High functioning, very intelligent man who has masked his entire life and at the age of 50 is diagnosed with autism. This was only a year and a half ago. But all along, seeing those patterns, now we look back and so much more makes sense in this turtle behavior, in this, you know, just inconsistency. We hear that in recovering work, right? Consistency over time. And in couples work, this is what we want to see. But what about when we don't? What about when they can show up and then they don't? So when I speak of neurodiversity, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. That's kind of where I'd like to keep the conversation going because now here's one thing that I can imagine that some people who are hearing this when they say, oh, and here's a guy finally at 50 gets this diagnosis. How do you navigate that diagnosis without making excuses for unhealthy behavior in your marriage relationship? How do you hold that tension between there's a very real diagnosable condition here, and yet there's also moral responsibility related to you being his wife?
Absolutely. And what is God calling him to? like what lines become blurry. We have had a lot of discussions around this. He actually has a tool that he uses. Is this my character defect, knowing you're going back to like 12-step language? Is this my flesh or my sark that's coming out? Or is this my autism, you know, deficits that are coming out? And we've had to take time to separate what that is. And I think that's really important because I call it kind of layers. We don't want this to be an excuse. And if he were here right now, he'd say, it's not an excuse. It's not an excuse for stonewalling. It's not an excuse for lying. It's not an excuse for any acting out behavior because I have a diagnosis of autism. Absolutely not. It gives us more information on certain things that he might go to for coping, but it does not excuse the destructive coping behaviors. And so that's been one way. So we've kind of, and for his linear brain, it's helped to be like, is it this or is it this? Is it a combination of both? So we've gotten really good at trying to define
that. Well, and even moving back just a little bit. So when this diagnosis comes about, what did that do for you in terms of maybe helping you understand in a whole new way your history in this relationship?
It took us back. I mean, we went into a lot of grief pretty quickly of the lost time and not knowing. And that's what I'm hearing in other neurodiverse relationships is we didn't know what we didn't know. But it started to make sense of a lot of this meltdown kind of episodic moments all the way back from our very early dating and going, why couldn't I bring, you know, a concern or feedback to him and have him receive that? He would trigger very easily. Now, some of that is his childhood wounds. Mm-hmm. There's that layer. This is not we can't bucket this separate from everything else and all the things that, you know, affected his personality and his being and, you know, all the things that he picked up to try and cope along the way. So it really gave light backwards. I mean, he wept when he heard the diagnosis. We knew it was coming by the time our neuroclinical psychologist gave him the diagnosis. He had done a lot of research.
Well, that's what I want to ask too. How did you guys know to even go get tested?
We heard a podcast when we were in our third separation. And that's why I'm just a fan for podcasts and just making sure that we have some information because it wasn't until that. And I do work in this field. And I thought, how in the world? I mean, we've tried to uncover every rock through the years with multiple expert therapists. And there's been other layers that I think God didn't reveal it to us until he did. But now knowing what I know, you know, they do call adult autism and Asperger's kind of the lost generation because kids and, you know, ADHD is getting more information. It doesn't excuse acting out behavior either, but it will tell us some neurology of the brain or some different ways we can work in recovery. And so we went the route, my husband's in the medical field, so he needed to look up all the white papers and he needed to do that. And I thought, great, he has some OCD tendencies in that. So he went that route. I listened to more podcasts and then we found a neuroclinical psychologist that did a thorough evaluation that had me involved. It wasn't just a quick, you know, assessment, you know, fill out this form because that would have been his perspective. So it was qualitative, quantitative. It was about a 4-hour assessment. There was parts that I was involved in. So that's how thorough it was for us.
So I can imagine we've got some wives that are listening right now that are going, okay, what do I look for? Now I know every relationship is different, but Especially maybe for wives that feel stuck, hey, we've tried everything. We're at an impasse in terms of, you know, you mentioned a lot about communication. You mentioned about these things where it's like, it feels emotionally like he sticks his head out from the shell and then boom, he goes back in. Are there some indicators that would cause somebody to say, well, maybe we should go test for a neurodiverse condition of some kind?
I would say, first of all, I would say, yes, there are some things you can look for. And some of them start to blur with recovery and, you know, in my case, a man in recovery and going, okay, a lot of the tools and things we're looking at can look similar to, you know, an addictive brain and that sort of thing. Because truly the parts of the brain that are affected by addiction are similar mm-hmm. to neurodiverse traits and, you know, deficits in the brain, strengths in the brain, coping, all of that. But I would say, you know, two of the biggest things, communication misses in general. So it wasn't just my relationship. If my husband, he would miss the kids. It was like two flyby planes, overwhelm that was kind of anxiety disguised and trying to, my husband would say, I would just mask. I'd try and like watch formulas in the room relationally, see how people are interacting. It wasn't just people pleasing. So that can be a coping strategy or an image management. But for him, he truly was trying to study the room, those sorts of things. So really getting honest about that. So communication was a big one. Anxiety being hidden, the rigidity and the formulas, needing to have formulas for things, which relational recovery and dynamics are organic. A hard time emotionally connecting. So we thought it was, you know, there was an emotional avoidance. Absolutely. It didn't come natural, but he was willing. This is the difference. He wasn't he had moments of defensiveness and rigidity and negativism and all the things that kind of came up in his assessment. And sometimes narcissistic kind of traits, if you will, but he was willing. His heart was willing. And he kept going, why can't I be normal? He would say that. And I don't know what you're saying, but in his world, we had like a double empathy bind because he couldn't fully understand my world. I couldn't fully understand his world. And yet we wanted to. He had been sober. He had done the work. He had gone to therapy. He had done 12 steps three times, doing 12 steps on lying and doing 12 steps on why do I avoid? And so when I got to see all those efforts and say, it's got to be something else, that is what I would encourage wives to consider. And it's not something I even professionally encourage right off the bat, let's go focus on the assessment. Like we still need to be focusing on recovery and creating, because we don't want it to be, oh, now it's about this and we've got some excuse or some, we want to just, you know, not overwhelm, because he would get very overwhelmed by that.
So, yeah.
You know.
Well, sometimes, I mean, one of the things you discover in recovery is that there's multiple layers to address.
Yes.
And you can't always address them all at once because it's just too much. So as we kind of get close to the end here of our conversation, I'd be curious just to know, like, how are things now? I mean, the fact that you guys have gone through and come to this place now, what does that look like for your relationship now? And what message maybe of hope mm-hmm. would you have for, especially for the wives out there that are feeling like, okay, we're trying to work on this thing. We're trying to do this restorative thing after there's been brokenness and betrayal, but they feel weary. They feel still confused. They feel like they're still searching for answers, not necessarily around like confession, but just like answers for the relationship. And so what would you share with us in terms of where you guys are now and what message of hope would you have?
Perseverance is the first word that comes to mind of really, you know, looking at those obstacles, staying in it, as long as, you know, God is calling you there and guiding you there. I think tethering to the Lord for me was so important. I know there's huge gaps in what we got to share here in our time, but that to me is keep tethering to the Lord and asking the Lord. I believe his timing was so divine for our story, and I believe that he will have divine timing for everybody's story, if we're willing to look at that. I think sometimes he will hold back on releasing information that he clearly knows. Mm-hmm. And so that's my hope is, are there things that you can focus on that are going well? And we still have struggles. We are in a neurodiverse marriage. I have, you know, a dyslexia form of dyslexia that sometimes makes my brain think very abstractly. And my husband has autism level one that makes his brain kind of go very linear. So guess what? We still have these moments of flyby communication. We just had one yesterday, and it was like, there's going to always be that. And I don't want to say it's buttoned up and perfect with a bow now, because it's not. Been a lot of hurt and harm. But there is joy that we can find in each other. There's an unmasking and acceptance around this that, gosh, I look back and I think even if it were 5 years earlier when my husband had been, would there have been too much shame to accept this? So really just trusting the Lord in the timing and taking slow steps. If there is potentially neurodiversity, I think speed, going too fast, too quick. And as partners, as a wife, we can go really fast in that, but, you know, pacing it.
And you know, the beauty and the hope is that because you have both stayed on a growth journey, a learning journey, you know now what you didn't know before. And so, you know, we need to remove any kind of shame around certain diagnoses. And so it's like, there's no shame about knowing that you've got autism. It's like, great. Now we've got something we can work with tangibly, or dyslexia or whatever. It's like, these are not labels to burden us.
That's right.
I believe that God says, hey, we've given you all these amazing, I've given you all these amazing tools so that you can have a greater understanding of how does your brain work? How does your body work? How do these relationships work? So as we close here, I want to invite you to share with our listeners where they can go to learn more about you and the coaching that you do, and also how they can get a hold of your book.
Sure. Thank you. So Living Stones Coaching is where I do most of my work. I'm in Arizona, and I get the privilege of seeing people every once in a while in person at my office space, but most of my work's online. So livingstonescoaching.com is the best way to get in touch with me. And I do some contract work with Hope Redefined. And so when I can't help everybody and, you know, what they might need, then that's my other team, my other arm of the work that I love to do. And the book is going to be out very, very soon. By the time this airs, it should be out on Amazon, and it's called Determined for More. And it really gives a more in-depth view and some resources and tools and just encouragement along the way in the long journey, because it was a 25-year long journey before we even got that diagnosis and got to really, I love how you said it, just, yeah, it's something to know, do something with it, and God giving us that and not having the shame behind it or the resistance or avoiding it. So that's the best way. And I'm just honored to be able to be here and share my story in a book that has been a big God assignment. But I hope that it'll open some eyes and hearts to, you know, differences and different parts of our stories that always, I feel like, always intertwine in this work. So.
Well, Shauna, thank you for being open with your story, and thank your husband for us too, that he's willing to have you share the story, but we appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Listeners and viewers, we're going to put all that information in the show notes so that you can link to Shauna's coaching website, as well as get access to the book. But also, we want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us. That's what we're here for, is to help you on that journey. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.